Welcome to the deep dive. If you're working in media or design or, digital publishing, you get it. Understanding what a digital image is, not just how it looks, is, well, it's foundational.
It really is. It's the difference between just using images and truly mastering them.
Exactly. So today we're taking your stack of source materials, which feel like a really structured professional guide, and we're going to turn it all into concise, actionable knowledge.
Right. We're moving beyond just, looking at a picture. We want to understand the properties, the math behind it all, and the critical trade-offs that decide if your final product looks amazing on a billboard or just loads fast on a phone.
That's the mission. We're structuring this for you, the listener, to really answer that core question. What is the actual difference between bitmap and vector images?
And what are those essential pillars that, influence image quality?
Okay, let's unpack this. We have two totally different systems for building an image. Let's start with the one most people run into every day, the bitmap. Or some call it a raster image.
A bitmap is, it's all about the grid. It's made up of a fixed grid, a matrix of tiny individual color pixels.
A grid of data points.
Exactly. The key takeaway here is that every single one of those squares, every pixel, holds a piece of information, a specific RGB color value, and that contributes to the whole picture.
And because it's a physical grid of data, that takes us right to its biggest limitation. If I take a beautiful high-res photo and I just start blowing it up, it falls apart.
Precisely. It's a hostage to its original dimensions. When you zoom in on a bitmap, you're just making those static data points bigger.
So you start to see the grid.
You do. The individual pixels become visible, and the image gets that familiar, blocky, pixelated look.
So they're great for photos, for that complexity and all the subtle color changes.
Absolutely, but they're terrible for scalability.
Okay, so if a bitmap is like digital paint, then the vector images, it's pure math, no pixel grid at all.
That's right. Vector images are not defined by dots. They're based on geometry. We're talking coordinates, mathematical calculations, algorithms that describe all the curves, lines, and fills.
And they use something called Bezier curves, right?
Yes, exactly. These are mathematically defined points that tell the software exactly how to draw these smooth, scalable shapes.
That mathematical description,
yeah,
that's the game changer. So if I'm using a vector, what does that mean for my workflow?
It means infinite scalability, no quality loss.
None at all.
None. If you resize a vector, the software just recalculates the math of those Bezier curves to fit the new size. It's why vectors are absolutely required for any core branding, asset logos, typography, illustration.
Because they have to scale from a tiny postage stamp to the side of a building.
And look perfect every time.
That makes sense. So we've got this core tension. Bitmaps for photo complexity, vectors for simple scalability. But if vectors are so much better at resizing, why haven't we, solved their complexity problem?
You mean why do we still need bitmaps for photos?
Yeah, why rely on bitmaps for high-res photography?
Well, because a vector trying to describe photorealistic detail, say all the subtle color shifts across a human face, would need millions of incredibly complex math formulas. The file would be prohibitively enormous and computationally so slow.
I see.
The pixel grid, on the other hand, is a much more efficient way to capture that real-world visual complexity, even if it is fixed.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Moving from the image type to the image quality itself. When you look at an image file, there are really three connected pillars that decide everything: quality, size, and what you can use it for. Let's start with the most basic one, pixel dimensions.
Pixel dimensions are pretty straightforward. It's just the total count of pixels wide by the total count of pixels high.
So if a web dev says they need an asset that's exactly 800 by 320.
They're talking about the pixel dimension. Simple as that.
That's pillar one. But the second pillar is often confused with dimensions, and that's resolution.
Right. Resolution is about the density of those pixels or dots. It's how many are packed into one physical inch. And we use different acronyms depending on where the image is going.
Okay, so for print, anything going on physical paper, like a magazine or a book?
For print, we use DPI or dots per inch.
And the professional standard for quality print is pretty high, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's at least 300 DPI.
Yeah.
That density makes sure that the tiny little dots of ink that make up the color are just invisible to the naked eye.
So what happens if you send a client a logo at, say, 72 DPI and they try to print it on a brochure? What's the disaster scenario?
The print shop will call very frustrated because when they try to upscale that low density image to the physical size of the brochure, it'll look muddy, pixelated, just soft. The data isn't there to make a quality print.
The information is just missing.
Precisely. Now, for digital products, screens, phones, websites, we talk about PPI, or pixels per inch.
The concept's the same, though, right? Yeah. Higher density, higher quality.
It's identical. And think about the source materials examples. An old iPhone 3 had a resolution of about 163 PPI.
Which is pretty low density.
It is. Now, compare that to a modern display, like the iPhone 13, which is pushing 460 PPI.
Wow.
That massive jump in PPI is exactly why text and photos on your phone screen today feel so much crisper, so much more photographic. It's all about that pixel density.
So we have dimensions and resolution.
Now, here's the often overlooked third pillar, and it ties everything directly to file size. Bit depth.
Bit depth. So this is the amount of color information stored in each individual pixel.
Exactly. We're not just talking about how many pixels there are, but how rich each one is.
Rich in what way?
In color data. For example, a standard 8-bit image can show about 16.7 million colors. But if you move up to a 16-bit or 32-bit image, you're capturing far more tonal nuance, a much greater color range.
You're capturing more data.
A lot more data.
Which means
exponentially larger file sizes.
Mm-hmm.
If you double the bit depth, you seriously increase the data stored in every single pixel, which then multiplies across that entire grid of pixel dimensions.
So that's the trade-off.
It's the crucial trade-off. Higher bit depth gives you professional-grade color fidelity, but it instantly balloons your storage and your processing needs.
Okay, that gives us the complete picture of quality, but, you know, that quality doesn't mean anything if the file is too big to even move around.
Right, which brings us to compression and file formats.
This is where we get into the real technical choices.
And we basically categorize file formats based on whether they are lossless or lossy. Lossless formats keep all the original data when you save. Nothing gets thrown away.
The common lossless ones are crucial for designers, like PNG. It's so valued because it supports transparency.
It does, which lets you overlay assets on complex backgrounds on a website seamlessly.
It's a lifesaver.
And PNG is actually a great example of compression. It uses a method called deflate, which is fantastic at compressing images with sharp edges or big areas of uniform color like logos or graphics, and it retains every bit of quality.
Then there's GIF, another lossless format. Its color palette is pretty limited, though.
Yeah, only 256 colors, so it's not great for photography. We mostly know it today because it can hold animation sequences.
And at the very top of lossless data, you've got the RAW file format from high-end cameras.
Right. RAW captures the unprocessed full bit depth data straight from the camera's sensor.
It captures absolutely everything.
Which is why RAW files are enormous and always, always need post-production editing before anyone can really use them. You're maximizing data capture, but you're sacrificing accessibility and file size.
Okay, so now let's look at the other side of this, the lossy format.
This is where compression gets clever. It strategically throws away data that the human eye is least likely to notice, which makes the file size radically smaller.
And the king of lossy formats is the JPG, or JPEG.
Without a doubt, it's the dominant format for digital photography.
How does it work, though? How does it know what to throw away?
This is where the deeper insight comes in. JPEG uses a technique called discrete cosine transform with something called subsampling. And what subsampling does is it exploits the fact that our eyes are less sensitive to shifts in color than to shifts in brightness.
So it discards some color data, but it prioritizes the sharpness and the brightness data, which we notice more. That's clever engineering.
It's very clever. The huge advantage is the small file size, which means fast load times. The huge drawback is that every time you save a JPEG, you lose more data.
And crucially, unlike PNG,
no transparency.
We should also mention the PDF format. It's an industry standard for delivering complete documents, like magazines, right?
Yes, PDF is critical for sharing and for print workflows. It ensures the formatting is preserved no matter what software someone uses to view it.
Okay, so that covers still images. What about moving images? The source material shows a clear evolution there, especially on the web.
It does. We started with GIFs, then came the huge popularity of Flash animation, using the SWF file type.
I remember Flash. It was everywhere.
It was. But the problem with Flash was, well, twofold. It needed a specific plugin to work, and it wasn't designed for the responsive nature of modern websites.
It was kind of a black box you just embedded in a page.
It was. And when support for the plugin ended, the industry had to pivot.
And that pivot led us right back to our first segment, didn't it? The need for a scalable solution.
Exactly. Today, modern web animation widely uses SVG, or scalable vector graphics.
A vector format.
By using a vector format, the animation is lightweight, it's infinitely scalable across different screen resolutions, and it's perfectly responsive. This makes SVGs so much more efficient than trying to render big GIFs or videos for simple wood graphics.
Of course, for full-length animated films and TV shows, that's different.
Right. Those typically rely on standard video formats, usually MP4, for final delivery.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, what we've really discussed today is a constant series of creative and technical trade-offs.
The core tension is always there. It's the pure scalability of vector math versus the high-fidelity complexity you can capture with bitmap pixels.
And across both, you have to balance dimensions, resolution, and bit depth against the sheer cost of file size.
Always.
So what does this all mean? The source material makes it pretty clear that professionals rarely get to choose a perfect solution. They have to choose the least imperfect one for a specific context.
And this raises the ultimate decision point. How do you prioritize data integrity versus delivery speed?
Right.
If you're capturing images for an archive or for VFX work or high-end print magazine, you have to prioritize capturing the maximum possible data. You'll favor raw, high bit depth.
But if you're designing a website where speed is literally money,
then you have to prioritize optimal delivery speed and storage efficiency. You'll favor highly compressed lossy formats like JPG or efficient scalable graphics like SVG. Your choice of format dictates your entire workflow, and it dictates the final quality of your media.
A perfect articulation of the digital image challenge. Hopefully, you now feel equipped to approach pixels and vectors not just as images, but as the complex data structures they really are. That's all the time we have for this deep dive.